Hi, this is Ruth McCauley returning with the second half hour of news from the Decatur area. We begin with some of the recent death notices that appear in the Decatur Herald and Review. Lee Bertha Fox, 85, of Decatur, departed this life on Thursday, April 21st, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Homegoing services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 30th, at the House of Faith Church of God in Christ, 1819 North Clinton Street. Burial will take place at Graceland Cemetery. Memorial donations may be made to the Miracle Temple Church of God in Christ. Professional services have been entrusted to Walker Funeral Service. Christian Gregory King, age 22, resident of Springfield, Illinois, went to be with the Lord on Monday, April 25th. Memorial services will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, April 30th, at the Walker Funeral Service in Decatur. There are no notes about donations or memorial gifts. Roy Lee Yarbury of Decatur went to be with his Lord and Savior on Saturday, April 23rd, at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur at the age of 50. Services will be held at 12 noon Saturday, April 30th, at Greater Northside Missionary Baptist Church, with visitation 1 hour before that service. Burial will take place at Greenwood Cemetery. Professional services have been entrusted to the Walker Funeral Service. Charles Chucky John Lur, 47, and that last name is Loehr, of Decatur, passed away on Monday, April 25th. Visitation to celebrate the life of Chucky Lair will be Saturday, April 30th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Memorial donations may be directed to the Fresenius, I'm sorry, that's F-R-E-S-E-N-I-U-S, Fresenius Kidney Care Center, 1830 South 44th Street, Decatur, Illinois, 62521. Wanda J. Myers, 87, of Maroa, passed away at 8:43 p.m. on April 23rd at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 30th, at the Maroa United Methodist Church, with Pastor Nick Showalter officiating. Burial will follow at the Maroa Cemetery. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Calvert Funeral Home in Maroa is in charge of the arrangements. Memorials may be directed to the Wanda Myers Scholarship Fund in the Maroa Forsyth School District. Judith A. Rob Norton, 75, of Monticello, passed away March 17th at home with her family by her side. A celebration of life will be held on Saturday, April 30th, at the Monticello Township Cemetery at 11 a.m., with Pastor Jeff Bielmeier officiating. Memorials may be made in Judy's name to the Carl Hospice at 611 West Park Street in Urbana, 61802. John P. McNamara, 53, of Decatur, passed away on Sunday, April 24th, in his residence. Services to celebrate John's life will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, April 29th, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the services. Memorials are suggested to the wishes of the family, care of Wendy McNamara. We turn now to the opinion section of the Decatur Herald and Review and pick up the editorial, which carries the headline, City Residency Rules Need Careful Thought. The Decatur City Council has spent some time discussing a policy that would require some or all city employees to live within the city boundaries. Such a policy makes a lot of sense in many respects, although, like with many issues, the details can get a little sticky. It seems appropriate for city workers to live within the city where they work. That means that city employees are paying their taxes to the place where they are getting their paychecks. It's not a perfect analogy, but if you drive by a plant that manufactures Chevrolets, it's doubtful there will be a lot of Fords in the parking lot. In addition, as a part of the city, city employees would naturally get a better feel for how city policies affect residents and will have a better feel for the community. That's something you can't really measure, but it's real. There is also a lot of sentiment that certain employees, such as police officers, should be a part of the community they serve. But there are obstacles to such a policy. To begin with, a lot of folks don't like to be told where to live. They want to be able to pick a neighborhood, school system, or general area that they feel suits their situation the best. With many two-income households, commuting may be an issue. In some cases, such requirements might be the subject of negotiations with employee unions. There's also the question of current employees. Would those that live outside the city be grandfathered in? Enforcement of any restriction also could be difficult. Currently, the city manager and department leaders in Decatur City government are required to live within the city limits, but those rules don't apply to other city employees. The city council in Springfield is considering a residency requirement, and it has attracted quite a bit of controversy. The city had a residency requirement for about 4 years until it was repealed in 2000. Mayor Jim Langfelder supports a residency requirement, and the council is expected to consider it this spring. In Springfield, it's estimated that about 40% of the city workforce lives outside the city. The city also had a vote on a non-binding resolution about 3 years ago in which 59% of the voters favored a residency requirement. At that time, however, the council was divided on the issue and no action was taken. Decatur City officials might want to watch the Springfield issue carefully. While many have said a residency requirement makes sense, others have seen it as an insult to nearby communities and an unnecessary burden on potential city employees. Without a doubt, city employees should want to live in the area where they work. The bigger question is whether that should be a requirement. We have one letter to the editor, signed by Mary Gendry of Decatur. Classmates remember a guy who lived the American dream. On April 14th, Decatur lost an amazing citizen when Robert L. Buster Powell Jr. passed away. To many of his former Decatur High School classmates, Buster was a legend and an example of someone who lived the American dream. He experienced hard times when he was growing up as a student in the Decatur public schools. He and his widowed mother never had much money to live on. Nevertheless, he worked hard, started his own business at the age of 21, and went on to become a very prosperous businessman. Some of us who knew Buster when he was a teenager thought his personality might change as he bought Decatur businesses and amassed wealth. We really didn't expect him to be the humble, down-to-earth classmate who was our friend in high school. Fortunately for us, Buster never changed. He always had time for his old friends. Bill Larrick, another one of our classmates, had this to say about Buster. He was a consistent one of the good ones. I always felt he was not a judgmental friend, however briefly or infrequently I chanced to meet him over the years since we graduated. Whatever anyone else feels, my belief is that his passing will leave a void in the positive side of humanity. Bill said it well, because Buster's passing has left a void. He will be remembered as a great husband and father, as the owner of businesses, gas stations, and action equipment, as an ordinary teenager who lived the American dream, and as a loyal friend who remained humble all of his life. Decatur is the home of many outstanding citizens, but none of them can fill the void left by Buster Powell. Again, a letter to the editor signed by Mary Gendry of Decatur. We're turning now to the Decatur Tribune again and coming up with Paul Osborne's City Beat column, which has the title, Watch Where You Step, Doggy Human Business Creates Problem in Central Park. With the warmer weather coming on, if you plan on taking a leisurely walk through Central Park, be sure and stay on the sidewalks. Park watchers and others connected to the area have been asking me to write something about the influx of dogs and human business that is increasing with the warmer weather. I know this is a delicate subject, but some of the downtown apartment dwellers have dogs, and they take them to the park to poop and never clean up after them, at least when they think no one is looking. The result is that people are stepping in it as they walk through the park, and it is even around the picnic tables where downtown workers and others come to eat their lunch or where families hold gatherings. I realize that a dog has to do what a dog does, and that's understandable, but dog owners have a responsibility to clean up after them. In fairness, I am told that a few of the people who bring their dogs to the park are conscientious and always clean up after their dogs. No one wants to come to the park and get that on their shoes or clothes. I read an AP item just the other day that the problem is so bad in Madrid that Mayor Manuel Carmena is warning dog owners they'll face stiff fines or possibly weekend work as street cleaners if they're caught in an upcoming dog poop crackdown. That's what, in quotes, dog poop crackdown. I doubt that kind of drastic action will be taken by the Decatur City Council, but if there is an ordinance against littering, wouldn't this be a form of littering? Maybe there is an ordinance that is not enforced. Another problem is that warm weather is also bringing out homeless people who use the park as their home, with actions similar to how some dogs are using it. Obviously, all that is left behind is not from the dogs. I'm hearing complaints that homeless people are sitting around the outside of the transfer house drinking beer. Where do homeless people get the money to buy beer? Getting sick and vomiting, plus urinating on the outside of the structure. This does not conjure up a beautiful picture or experience for visitors to our city. There is no need for homeless people to live in the park. Decatur has plenty of places the homeless can go to get assistance and even help them get back on their feet, if they want to get back on their feet. I'm not looking down on the plight of homeless people in our community, but homelessness should not be an excuse to do what you want to do on public property. Hopefully, there can be a closer look taken at what's happening in the park before the band concerts start on Monday evenings and the Decatur celebration rolls around. We certainly want everyone to enjoy the park, but we want to make sure that what they take home from their experience in Central Park is not on their shoes or their clothes. As always, an interesting little column by Paul Osborne, the editor of the Decatur Tribune. The headline in this item from the Tribune kind of caught my eye. I'm beginning to understand what it means. The headline reads, Decatur Township Assessor's Office to hold Senior Freeze Clinic. The 2016 Senior Citizens Assessment Freeze Homestead Exemption is available to all resident homeowners age 65 and above who had gross household incomes of $55,000 or less in 2015. The 2016 assessment freeze is applicable to the real estate taxes payable in 2017. Because it is based on income, application for this exemption must be made annually on the P-Tax 340 form. If you have already filed your application for this calendar year, 2016, you do not need to repeat the process. For the convenience of Decatur Township seniors who wish to apply for this freeze, the Assessor's Office has scheduled a Senior Freeze Clinic. The clinic will be held on Tuesday, May 3rd and Wednesday, May 4th from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. in the Decatur Township Assessor's Office, located on the first floor of the Decatur Township Office Building, 1620 South Taylorville Road in Decatur. The Decatur Township Office Building offers plenty of free parking, with a small lot in front of the building and a large parking lot behind the building. If utilizing the lot behind the building, you may either take the stairs or the elevator up to the first floor. Bring your federal tax return for 2015 and all supporting 1099 forms for everyone in the home. This information will be used by representatives from the Macon County Supervisor of Assessments Office to verify total household income. Note that this clinic is first come, first served. No registration is required. If you have any questions or need further information, contact our office at 428-3479. I'm going back and picking up an editorial back on the opinion page that carries the headline, GOP Leaders Have Gone AWOL. Someone slap a photo of Mike Pence on a milk carton. The Indiana governor may not have been abducted, but he's certainly missing an action on the central question facing the Republican Party. Are you with Trump or against him? Pence is hardly alone on the sidelines, of course, but the crowd of wet-fingered politicians trying to determine which way the wind is blowing doesn't matter. Pence does. If Donald Trump loses the May 3rd Indiana primary, it is all but certain he will fall short of the 1,237 delegates necessary to win the nomination on the first ballot. Indiana is now the gates of Vienna for stopping the Trumpian takeover of the GOP. That's why Ohio Governor John Kasich and Texas Senator Ted Cruz have struck an admittedly awkward and somewhat unsightly deal to coordinate their campaigns to keep Trump from winning there. Kasich is dropping out of the Indiana race, and Cruz will clear a path for Kasich in New Mexico and Oregon. Kasich almost immediately stumbled trying to stick to the deal, but it remains as close to a united front against the longtime Democrat turned Republican pretender as we're going to get. And where is Pence, longtime proponent of conservative courage? In his bunker, insisting that he's for anybody but Hillary and Bernie Sanders. To be fair, Pence is in a pickle because he's up for re-election in 2016, and the beleaguered Hoosier thinks he can't afford to alienate any Republican voters. Boo-hoo. If current general election poll results are even remotely accurate, Trump would go down to a defeat of biblical proportions in November. His standing with women is so low, he even puts automatically Republican states such as Mississippi and Utah into play. He's wildly unpopular with young voters. 17% have a favorable view of him in the latest Harvard Public Opinion Project poll. Only 37% of young Republicans view him favorably. Trump's new de facto campaign manager, Paul Manafort, recently told fellow Republican insiders not to worry. All of this can be overcome because Trump's vulnerabilities merely reflect personality problems, while Clinton's reflect character issues. Fixing personality negatives is a lot easier than fixing character negatives, Manafort said. You can't change somebody's character, but you can change the way somebody presents himself. Let's say it's possible that personality and character aren't synonymous in the minds of voters, but the notion that Trump, a litigious, thrice married, confessed adulterer with a history of hawking snake oil products, among other sketchy business practices, has no character issues, must have Clinton's opposition research team spit taking lattes out of their noses. Trump says he can start acting presidential with a flip of the switch. But does anyone who is not besotted with Trump Kool-Aid think this is actually possible? Pence is surely aware of Trump's unfavorables, but what he may not have considered is that if Trump loses the general election in a landslide, the recriminations will be ferocious. The postmortems will undoubtedly focus on who had a chance to stop Trump when it was possible. Among the first in the dock, the Hamlet of the Hoosiers. Many conservatives in Indiana have rallied to Cruz's banners already. Kurt Smith, the president of the Indiana Family Institute, told the Washington Examiner that Pence would lock in his base by endorsing Cruz, and it would give Cruz a big advantage because the Pence campaign is well organized on the ground. Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, helped deliver Cruz's blowout victory there last month. It's unlikely he'll regret that decision down the road. Then, of course, there's the case for supporting Cruz on the merits. As I've been saying for months, the Republican primary season will end in tears no matter what. If Trump is the nominee, many conservatives will stay home or vote for a third-party candidate. If he's not the nominee, many of Trump's supporters will stay home. So why not fall back on principle and pick a side? Pence has spent his career cultivating a reputation as a principled, full-spectrum conservative with a populist disdain for D.C. Beltway games. In other words, he is entirely simpatico with Cruz ideologically. With Kasich out in Indiana, Pence can no longer claim that voters don't face a stark choice. It's time for him to show that he has the courage of his convictions. I happen to be a fan of the television program Fixer Upper, so I'm going to read this AP Wire story out of New York. Fixer Upper, a must-see for fans, and this is written by Alicia Rencilio, an AP writer. With all the joking and hamming for the camera that Chip Gaines does on Fixer Upper, it's hard to believe that he initially was the shy half of the husband and wife duo that's garnered huge fans and ratings for HGTV. He was scared of the camera at first, where it was a real phobia, said Joanna, who plays the abbot to Chip's Costello. He would freeze up and then he would have to exit and it would be just me. To say that edge wore off is an understatement. He once got so comfortable that he ate a dead cockroach just to prove he would. Joanna responded with a mix of shock, humor, and disgust, and he drew plenty of laughs, including from viewers. It's the combination of humor, love, and chemistry between Chip and Joanna that have made the Waco, Texas-based home improvement show one of HGTV's most popular shows. Its recent season finale was the fifth highest broadcast in the network's history. As the name suggests, Fixer Upper has the couple taking a subpar home and remaking it into a dream house, thanks to Joanna's designs and Chip's carpentry work. Devoted watchers now know all about Joanna's love of shiplap, wide wooden board siding, their four kids, and even the carpenters they use. We love seeing the transformations. It inspires us to see the potential in our own home, said Tara Melodic of Toms River, New Jersey. They have such great chemistry. They really seem to love each other and love what they do. How many people get to make a living doing what they love most with the person they love most? Even celebrities tune in. Ryan Reynolds has tweeted out at us a few times, and Scott Foley and his beautiful wife watch the show and every now and then live tweet with us. So we've become, you know, Twitter friends with these folks. It's really been something else. I mean, very surreal, said Chip. The Gaineses are expanding their business. Besides their real estate and construction business and fixer-upper, there's a home line with paint and rugs, a Magnolia Market store located at Silos in Waco, which they recently renovated for retail and a gathering space, plus a bed and breakfast called Magnolia House in McGregor, Texas. A book called Magnolia Story is scheduled for release this fall. Other tidbits from the Gaineses: how their marriage turned into a home renovation partnership. Joanna: when we were dating, Chip was doing the whole real estate thing. He was renovating homes, and so I would just come along with him and watch what he did. The first year of marriage, we just started partnering together, so honestly, we don't know it any other way. We always have to be kind of together on these projects. I need to get his input, he needs me, and I think we figure out a way to balance it all out. Why are their kids so well behaved? Chip: lots and lots of editing. They are great kids. We try to watch them really closely because obviously they didn't ask for any of this. They're just kids. Our oldest is 11 and the youngest is 6. And it's been now almost 4 years, 3.5 years that we've been doing this. Once that van rolls in, the kids get geeked out because they know there's all these snacks that these guys basically house in the back of these vans. All four of our kids just run to it like it's Christmas morning. How long does a home renovation really take? Joanna: depends on a house. Right now we're working on 7 homes for season 4. So the smaller homes will have done in 8 weeks and the larger projects will be 12 weeks. It's definitely expedited because in our business at home, generally it takes 4 to 6 months for any larger renovation. Do clients pay for the furniture? I've wondered that myself. Joanna: it all depends on the client and their budget. Our show features real clients with real budgets. The furniture budget is not part of the renovation budget. It's something some clients add at the end. About half of our clients already have all their own furnishings, some of which I use for the reveal, and others buy the items I decorate the home with. The main reason I decorate the rooms for the reveal is because I want the clients to get the full picture of how to maximize their newly renovated space. Will they ever leave Waco? Joanna: every day we get an email, come to Florida or come to New York. As much as we'd love to, with our children being so young, we've decided to stay in the Central Texas area so we're close to home. But later, when they're off to college, I think we'd love to take our show on the road. Okay, if you haven't ever watched this, you got to go watch it now. But, you know, if you like home renovation and decoration and architecture and yards and stuff like that. I'm very, very fond of it. Anyway, thanks for indulging me with that. You kind of had no choice, did you? I kind of forced it on you. I still hope you enjoyed it. They're a fun couple to watch, and they do amazing things with these houses. And with that, we are out of time for news from the Decatur area, although this came via Waco, Texas, so to speak. We are out of time for news from the Decatur area for Thursday, April 28th. I will see you in the month of May again for more reading. This has been Ruth McCauley. It's always a pleasure, and I hope it is for you too. And until that time, you all take care.